Yo, hey, y'all. Thank you so much, Richard. Thank you. And thank you to the Driehaus Museum and WGN Radio and our team at the corner store.
Ernie.
And Ernie. This is Ernie, the producer. Make some noise for the producer one time. We got our she's hidden today. She didn't bring out the ones and twos today, but our super producer every week is DJ Cashera. She's also in the building. You can make some noise for DJ Cashera. Max in the back is the official snack tour of the corner store, and so he's also in the building. We want to thank, of course, Stolen Spirits for providing us with some cocktails. Are y'all imbibing, enjoying the beverages this evening? Good. Tarma Hadaven, how are you?
I'm good, Kevin. Koval. Oh, I have to say your whole name.
I appreciate you. Yeah. Tarma. No, Tarma Hadaven, Nightmares Like Wes Craven. That's how I remember how to pronounce the last name. And
I don't have one for you.
I know. That's fine. Yeah. Oval with a C. That's what my dad says.
That's a good one. Everyone wanted to say Koval.
Yeah, I know a lot of people.
It's not Oval,
it's Oval. Yo, we are in, of course, the beautiful Driehaus Museum. We are doing a live version of our podcast called The Corner Store on WGN Radio. We have a live studio audience. Out of curiosity, how many of y'all have been in this impeccable, beautiful, brilliant building before? Some of y'all. Okay. So like a tenth, maybe? A 15th? I'm not good at math. Some of y'all have been here.
That was like five.
Five. Yeah, I don't know. I'm like 80,000 have been here. I'm really interested in this space and certainly excited to talk about where we're at a little bit, and particularly the new vision of I think where this space is going. And we have a really incredible thinker and curator, someone who I'm really excited to talk about his role here. Kelly Suma is in the corner store. Make some noise for our guest, y'all. Kelly.
Thank you.
Now, Kelly, welcome, and of course, this is your home, really, so we're going to ask you a lot of questions about it in some ways, but we are, before we address you properly, we have some gifts for all of our guests in the corner store,
nice.
Directly from the corner store. So tonight, Max was thinking we're in a fancy place, like probably we're a little more health conscious in this joint, and so, Max secured some Vita Coco Pure Coconut Water with pineapple for you. I don't know if you, get down.
I support.
You support. And then also, listen, the good news is there's no sugar added in this. It's a pressed by kind cherry apple chia bar. Only fruit and I don't know what it is, but I think you're going to like it. I think maybe not.
I'll take it.
Yeah, you could eat it now or share it.
Should we give the audience
their
gifts?
You're right. Dang. Yeah. Yo, Max also laced
really
the audience, y'all. So, audience, it also does not stop for you. Max, for the audience, I don't know how you guys are going to divvy these up.
Also, I hope your hands are clean.
Right. I know. I hope you wash your hands. We're in a very civilized environment right now, so I hope I don't see any of these. We discussed this. Is it
Haribo? The man knows.
That's 85 different responses. I don't know what it is, but we got some gummy bears, the gold bears for y'all. I'm going to... It's your responsibility now. Wait, hold on. This is a second. I won't put it all on you.
Give it like midway.
Oh yeah. All right. And then y'all, because Max thought that these were not going to sully your fingers. Got some milk chocolate Reese's peanut butter cup minis. All right. So I'm just gonna throw it. All right. I'm dead ass. All right. There you go. All right.
Hey. Ooh,
all right. Very good. Hey. All right. All right. So
that was nice.
Please enjoy.
Did you miss her capping it?
No, I saw that. No. Okay, that was dope. No, she got hands. Sure. The Cubs need her. Kelly, welcome, man. Yeah, thank you so much for being with us.
Good to have you.
Thanks for having me here.
Very fly fit, by the way. Right?
Yeah, you really showed up.
Yeah.
More than you.
Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. I expect it. I mean,
not more than me, more than you.
Yeah, no, that's fair. No, I agree. I'm that's fine. I'm comfortable with that.
Yeah, I got the memo, so.
You did.
I'll come through.
Doing it well.
It's
only. So we're gonna talk very much about what your presence in this building means, but before we do any of that, let's just talk about who you are and where do you come from.
That's a long story.
We got time, y'all. That's why we're here.
All right. I think I'm going to start with... So I was born in Ghana. I was born in Accra. My parents came from different cities, Shia and Takrade, and they met in the capital city in Ghana, Accra. So that's where I was born, and I lived there for 8 years until we relocated to Vienna, Austria. So that was in 98, and I grew up there, went to school there, went to international school there, and grew up there basically till I came to Chicago for undergrad. So that was about 2009.
Okay.
And I came to the School of the Art Institute of Chicago to do my bachelor's in fine arts. And along the way, stayed for a very long time and got another degree in visual and critical studies. And now I'm finishing off my master's in architecture at the school.
Bet. Okay.
Well, how did you start making art?
I think everyone has a kind of a similar story as to how they got involved with art. So they started drawing when they were young, copying stuff. So for me, I was drawing around the age of 8, and I would say that my interest increased when I moved to Vienna, and then I was drawing from like video game manuals, anime, comic strips, and we had a really good arts program at my school that started really young. I think they started the kids with art in kindergarten, and that extended all the way into high school. So I graduated high school with an IB kind of like class in art. I did art high level. So my interest was sustained throughout my education.
Okay. Yeah. And what was it like being Ghanaian in Austria? I don't know the Ghanaian population Austria, but I'm just...
And how does living in Vienna, like, you know, inform your art?
There is a vibrant expat community in Vienna. So there is the reason why my family relocated was there is a UN headquarters in Vienna. So that's the United Nations. And my dad is a nuclear physicist. So he worked with the...
Not so subtle flex.
Gotta throw it in there.
Yeah, right. No doubt. My dad's an Uber driver.
Had to throw that one in there.
Not so subtle flex.
Maybe some of these people have been driven by your father.
Some of them, hopefully, maybe have. Yeah.
Yeah. And so he worked with the IAEA, so that's the International Atomic Energy Agency, and that's where they headquartered is in Vienna. So a lot of international kind of UN workers, physicists, inspectors, kind of congregate into the city. In addition to that, there's also other large international bodies that are connected to the UN. So there's OPEC as well. So that's kind of all the petroleum-producing countries. Yeah. So you have different communities in there in the city, and it's small, but they all kind of are around the same place and oftentimes around the international school. So being in that school, I didn't necessarily feel too out of place. Not to say that the African population in my school was high either. We were really small. So in a class of maybe 120, there were maybe six of us total. So that kind of gave me an environment that helped me mediate my experience in the city of Vienna, which has a reputation for being grumpy, but very beautiful as well. So those are the kind of the two qualities that kind of shaped my experience there. I was immersed in architecture and art and, you know, music. Vienna is a really important city for all of those three things. Kind of the capital of the Habsburgs Empire before it came down. So historically, it's a really important place. And I think having collapsed, especially after the World Wars, kind of created a situation where people were holding on to certain kinds of vestiges of their national identity and saw any kind of outsider as a threat to that. So, and that included other Europeans, not just people who are black and brown. Yeah.
I do imagine Vienna is really homogenous.
Yes and no.
Well, I mean, it seems like you said no, but in my mind, like,
yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Certainly, what like they yeah. made that good Nazi run, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
They had that,
yeah.
like, yeah.
Unfortunately,
yeah,
yeah, yeah. There's they a rumor that to both, make it that both way. World yeah. wars were started by an Austrian.
Oh,
yeah. Facts. So,
yeah,
not a good history. Yeah.
So you've been in Chicago for about a decade.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And so you came for school, but what are your thoughts of the city and particularly kind of the various artistic communities mm-hmm. that I know you are part of and privy to? And
mm-hmm. So my first impressions of Chicago is like it's very large compared to Vienna. So the entire population of Austria is about 7 million. So that's maybe double if you like. Double the size of Chicago in terms of population, 3 million, you get close enough. So Chicago was very expansive and very open in terms of its arts community. I didn't feel like I could easily navigate my way through Vienna's arts kind of hubs. And partly because I don't think I was as plugged in when I was in high school. And coming in here in college just had a very different experience. And it just felt very open to doing new things. And a lot of my friends were, you know, showing in DIY spaces or creating their own opportunities and spaces. So I think I felt like, you know, Chicago is a good, fertile ground for kind of an arts community. Yeah.
What made you stay?
I think just finishing school. I think I thought about leaving maybe after I had completed my undergrad. So that was like 5 years. After 5 years, I was like thinking of moving somewhere else. But I think when I looked around and was looking into the programs that I was interested in, and at this point I had, you know, developed a keen interest in architecture, I think it made sense to still stick around. So yeah, that's what kept me.
So now let's talk about your work as an artist, as a thinker, as a curator. What are some of the things that now in your graduate work, I mean, what are some of the things that you are wrestling with, dealing with, thinking about?
So I've been thinking about house museums a lot lately. That's what my thesis is kind of exploring. And I am still basically trying to find where that spark came from. I think probably has something to do with, you know, my relationships to different, you know, ideas of home and houses having moved, really moved majorly twice. But I think that at the core of that search is just having questions around display and questions around exhibition and exhibition making. I think as artists, we work around kind of an experience that's around the eye. Like I'm looking at something and I'm kind of having an experience around that. And I felt like my thesis was, oh, I wonder if house museums have this potential or this promise, at least, you know, in their name, house and museum, that there's possibly a different experience that could be had at this space as opposed to going to, you know, the MCA or to the Art Institute, which have, you know, a different way of being situated in the city and being situated in exhibitions and exhibition making. So I wonder if there's like an opportunity here for something new and something different. And so that's kind of what started my curiosity and my journey into curating.
What are some other house museums that are well-known? I'm not familiar.
Yeah, so there's a consortium of house museums in Chicago, and about 26 make that list. And I've been to 13 at this point for my thesis, just visiting, talking to the directors, documenting them through photography, kind of just recording my experiences along the way and seeing if some of the things I've been looking for are present. So, for example, Clark House, which is close to the Glessner House. So that's on 18th and close to 18th in Michigan. So South Loop area. That's maybe the oldest house museum in Chicago. That was built before the fire. And so it's like an all stone house. And that's why it survived. And then the newest one that I've been to is in Schaumburg called the Schweiker House. And that's kind of a modernist building built in 1938. And so there's a huge range between the two in terms of the asset that the museum has, the history, how do they interpret the house, whether through the lens of the architect or through the lens of the artist or through another kind of programmatic lens. And all of those different decisions open up possibilities. And right now, historic house museums have a are seen to have a disadvantage because they have a lot of things that can't be touched. And so you can enter into a space and feel really claustrophobic because it's like everything is precious, as opposed to walking into the into like a larger space like the Art Institute, where there's a little bit more latitude. You can walk around, you can you know, look at things without feeling like you're going to break something. But it's been interesting kind of going into these different spaces and seeing how they use their space to frame the narrative or to frame the exhibitions. And there's always something odd going on in there. And I feel like that's something that they can use to their benefit as opposed to seeing it as a detriment.
Well, and of course, we're in a house museum right
yes.
now. At the, you know, Driehaus Museum is a house museum, a beautiful house that has become a museum. How did your relationship with this space start? And what we kind of want to talk about, of course, what is your role here and what is, you know, the future? But how did it begin?
It started, so I was doing an internship with the Graham Foundation, which is located in another house museum, Mad Lerner House, and it's not too far off from here. So I was working there, and I was talking to Sarah Herder, who is the director of that space, and kind of my other supervisors there, Ellen and Ava, about this idea of house museums and thinking about that. And I was invited to a meeting of house museums in Chicago. And so I went along, and that's actually the first time I met Richard. And Ellen introduced me to him, and we had a conversation. And later on, I came to see this particular house. And then, really interestingly, I think Richard was cooking up something and didn't reveal all his cards, but I sensed something was happening in this space.
Was he twirling his mustache, too?
Just took me on a tour, showed me how beautiful the space was, and kind of like sweet-talked me into the possibilities and the potentials that were going to be taking place in this space. And so I was thinking about that, and about a month later, I got a call from Richard about this opportunity to be a part of this fellowship program, this contemporary arts initiative. So I definitely jumped on that opportunity to, you know, be a part of this.
What are the things you like about Driehaus, I guess? Or like what's like stands out to you when you first came here?
I think anytime you enter into a house museum, that threshold point is really important because you don't even know it's a museum in the first place. You walk past it, and that happened to a lot of the other buildings. But I think with the relationship that I've had here, it's one that has been inviting. And so I think over time, I feel comfortable taking up more space here. And I think as a result of that, I feel that there is a possibility to extend that kind of invitation and hospitality to Chicagoans. And so I think that the Driehaus Museum is one of, you know, is leading that kind of edge in opening up its doors in a radical way and inviting in not only kind of contemporary artists to show, but kind of emerging artists in the city, and using their space and their resources as a kind of platform to launch people's careers.
Yeah, which is beautiful and very refreshing, right?
Yeah,
especially
yeah.
given, you know, the not only where we are geographically in the city, but
yeah.
also, I mean, this is such a beautiful home, but it's also intimidating in that way.
Yeah.
So to be able to kind of open the doors
yeah.
and reimagine what might also be inside seems
yeah.
to be significant.
Yeah, and I think there's a legacy of that here too. So the Nickersons, you know, were collectors, they supported artists, they were early trustees of the Art Institute. So some of this is actually in its DNA. So I think that it really makes sense to kind of extend that and build upon that legacy. And I'm sure that other spaces have something like this that could also be opened up to their various constituents and their various communities. Yeah.
But you mentioned the opportunity, the fellowship program. So what is your role here? And if we could talk a little about the fellowship program, we're also going to get an opportunity to talk to one of the fellows.
So the Contemporary Arts Initiative that was started by Richard is showcases, started out with Yinka Shanibare and showcasing an international and acclaimed artist in this space who is in conversation with houses like this.
And that's the exhibit that's up
now. That's up right now.
And it's up for a while. So as people are listening to this, obviously both in the audience, but also you know, on the pod, they could come see it.
It opens till September. So there's a lot of time to come see the work. And it's perfectly situated here because Yinka spoke to spaces and people who would have occupied these types of spaces. But the emerging kind of artist fellowship is a program that I'm creating and co-creating with the fellows that kind of sits in relationship to that. And so what my envision was that, well, how can the museum be this resource and continue this legacy that the Nickersons had? And so what I've kind of created are different kinds of opportunities. So one of them is basically doing these kind of seminars where we bring in different arts professionals in the city, so from the MCA, from the Art Institute, and definitely from the Dreamhouse Museum, to kind of talk through different topics and issues that artists experience. So as an artist, you have to write a lot of grants, get into residencies, you have to cultivate relationships in the art world, you have to think about the longevity of your work, exhibition prep, transport, all of these things that sometimes get covered in your education, but a lot of times people have to figure that out either on your own or do other kinds of residencies in the city or talk to other artists to figure out. And in addition to that, we provide opportunities for artists to be in conversations with curators. So we had an event where the fellows were speaking with Naomi Beckwith, who's a curator at the MCA, and Larry Sims, just kind of about, you know, their kind of careers, their life, how have they navigated this world, what are some of their concerns. And those conversations have been really fruitful in kind of providing insight. And in addition to that, there's going to be an exhibition opportunity for the fellows as well. So there are just lots of different opportunities where that are kind of outward facing, but then there's also a whole other program where we're having dinners and doing studio visits internally, so to foster a kind of community among the fellows to see each other, you know, not only as peers but also as friends.
The name of the exhibit and the name of the fellowship are similar, right? A Tale of Today.
Mm-hmm.
How are they in conversation with each other?
So I think that A Tale of Today is, the title is meant to focus on the contemporary. So historic house museums typically focus on the historic aspect of the house, using the house as an object on display, you know, talking about kind of the architecture and
it's what it was back in the day.
And that has its audiences and that has its, strengths, but I think a lot of people that also makes it a kind of one-time visit. You come in, you see this house, and you're like, "Oh, now I know the Dreamhouse," and you move on. But I think with the Contemporary Initiative, so and the Tale of Today comes from Mark Twain, so but it's to focus on this idea of the contemporary, and can we make this a venue and a site that continually gives not only to its audience but extends that to, you know, a broader Chicago public. And so that prefix is important to kind of showcase the main exhibition that's happening, but also the kind of platform that the museum is trying to create for emerging artists.
Okay. And of course, the fellows, you've assembled quite the squad.
Yeah.
Right? It's like Voltron, right?
Yeah.
Did you make those selections or you worked with Richard?
I think when I was pitched this idea to be part of this program, we were also looking to get support from the Joyce Foundation. And so I just was like, okay, who do I know who would be interested and could benefit from this opportunity? And at that point, nothing was fleshed out. So it was like, it's an idea. And so I had no idea what the implications would be, what the opportunities it would look like, what the role would be playing. And I really wanted gather people who I felt could help co-create this so that moving forward, this is like a robust and strong program that could be opened up to a wider audience. So the four are really strong artists in their own right, yeah. Makers, and I'm proud to be working with them.
Well, we're gonna have an opportunity to talk with one of them, so maybe we'll bring Jeff Lee up now. Y'all, please help us welcome one of the fellows of the program, an incredible interdisciplinary artist, originally from Venezuela, but of course is doing incredible work here in Chicago. Please make some noise for Jeff Lee Molina. Jeff Lee, welcome.
Hi. Thank you.
How are you?
Very well.
Good. We have some snacks for you in the corner store as well. Let's see what we got. First of all, Max secured some Tropicana lemonade with other natural flavors. That seems shady. It's like, why just not have lemonade? But yeah, you got. I don't know what you want to do with that. And then some crispy, shareable sized M&Ms. I don't know what makes it crispy, but please enjoy it. Yeah, from the corner stores.
That was a nice. Good sell.
No. Yeah. Look, M&M's not a sponsor of the podcast. Once they are, I'll be like, these are aspirational. You're right. Yeah.
Sponsored by.
But welcome.
Thank you.
And I want to say I'm already a big fan.
Same.
The show at Kavi Gupta that you had last year.
Thank you.
So really beautiful. I mean, I'm going to mess it up if I describe it, but for me, I felt like it was like collage, color block, portraits, that was
mixed
trying.
Mixed media.
Yeah, mixed media and trying to like, maybe, I don't know, something about like maybe, queering racial identity. I don't know. That's what I took away from, watching, but big fan of your work. So welcome to the corner store.
Thank you, Kevin. And Tara.
Welcome. Yeah.
Now, so of course you are not born and raised in Chicago, but you come from Venezuela.
Yes, I was born and raised in Venezuela. I spent some time in Miami, and then I came to Chicago in 2011 to attend the School of the Art Institute, where actually Kekeli was my orientation leader.
History.
And it's funny because back then we didn't know each other's work. I mean, my work was not, I didn't know what I was doing back then. But Kekeli was left such a memorable impression on me. It was just so welcoming into the school. And I think that it's such a perfect fit for this new fellowship because, as you said, this place is so intimidating. And for Kekeli to be taken on this role, suddenly he's giving me an orientation again.
Yeah. Gosh.
To this house.
It never ends.
Feel yet again welcome in a new place.
Yeah, that's dope. So when from Venezuela to Miami, and there's so many Venezuelans in Miami.
Yeah, right now.
Right, yeah.
I'm sure you know. Those of you who read the news. Yes.
When did you come from Venezuela to Miami?
I came in 2007, and I have been in the States for 12 years now. And I came originally because I come from the Andes in Venezuela. We do have one university for arts, but it wasn't something that. We didn't have even a museum in where I was born. So to be an artist there was not something feasible. It wasn't something that my parents really quite understood, though they were entirely supportive. So also we got a lot of exchange students in our little town because nobody spoke English. So suddenly this curiosity of speaking a new language and also of being able to be in a place where I could be an artist and that was not a crazy thing became a real desire. And it moved me to ask my parents to allow me to come and live in Miami with an aunt who was starting a restaurant. And well, that's a very long story that we don't have time for. But that's how I came. I came first to Miami because I had the support with my parents and my aunt to go there, and I started my bachelor's in New World School of the Arts there. And then eventually I met this lovely family who told me that Chicago was an amazing city and that I should be in a private school. And they actually sponsored me to come to the School of the Art Institute because they fell in love with my work. So that's how I happened to come to Chicago in 2011.
Did they tell you it was going to be cold?
I came in the worst blizzard.
Oh,
they kept saying, back then I didn't have a smartphone.
Oh, no.
So I had one of those flip phones, and I wasn't really into news back then. So I suddenly am walking outside from my building, and the snow is, I don't know how many feet, inches high. And I want to go to the grocery store.
Was this
store.
2011?
Yeah,
2011. I remember that blizzard. Yes.
And then I go to the grocery store, and it's closed. And, you know, grocery stores never close. And then it was closed. So it was like the worst day of the blizzard. And I was thinking, oh, wow, this is how it is. This is going to be fun. But, yeah.
How did you develop an interest in art if there wasn't a big art community?
My interest in art comes from when I was a child. I was really the most consistent thing. I was very polyphasetic. I liked singing, but I don't have a good voice. I wanted to learn how to play guitar, but I'm half deaf. So I wanted to act. I still attempt writing. I don't know that I'm very good at it. But
no, you are. You have beautiful pieces on your website.
And then, but painting and drawing was something that was consistently good, and or at least people will not turn me down on that. So I kept doing it, and it was just it was a necessity. From when I was 4 or 5 years old, I've always been involved in the visual arts, and yeah.
Yeah, and so for people who might not be familiar, how do you describe your practice and the work that you make?
Well, I think the work that I make is primarily figurative. I use a lot of influences from surrealism, from magical realism, especially. Magical realism is a movement in Latin American, especially literature, and that it basically is imagine reality indoors with the magic of sayings and things that you would... euphemisms, is that a word? When you exaggerate things, well, these things will actually happen in these books. And it's really beautiful because I grew up in a home with a lot of sayings. All of my I think my wisdom comes from sayings. So, if I have any. I think that I definitely wanted to incorporate that into my work. And when I came here, I learned more about surrealism. I also learned about conceptual art. I also learned about minimalism. So suddenly all of these different, being exposed to all of these different movements had an effect on my current work, which I think grasps a lot of the culture I come from and also from my present. And it's constantly transforming. I mean, I'm a painter mainly. I have done some public sculptures, all of which are in Florida now. I love poetry, reading, and I have begun writing some poems of my own. I don't yet consider myself a poet, but I adore language, to put it that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now in this program, what does it mean to have the space to be able to be in conversation with other artists, to be focused in an informed community, and also then have the space to be able to think, but also be able to make?
Well, it was very surprising, to be honest. I have heard of this beautiful home before. Unfortunately, the person that presented it to me before was like, there is a beautiful old house that you should visit. And that's the Treehouse Museum. And I'm just like, okay, I don't want to go to an old house. And so this was years ago. Eventually, I had the opportunity through Kekeli to visit this museum. And to be honest, from the first moment I walked in, I was in awe, especially because of what I just said, this magical realism, this surrealism. There is so much of that in this house. All of this pattern, all of these beautiful chandeliers, the Tiffany glass, the lights, the design of this house. It lends itself so completely to my imagination. I did not expect that. And I have to say thanks to also Amy, Anna, and Richard. Because yet again, like Kelly was an orientator for SAIC, and he made that experience so welcoming, my English wasn't even very good back then when I just first came to Chicago. I felt a little bit the same when I walked into this house. And then suddenly everyone is so welcoming. And they really allow me to feel that, okay, you completely belong here. You're one of our fellows. Just sit in front of you, you know. And that's just like, well, what can we do? You need your coat hung. You need this. They're always so absolutely open and welcoming. And I think that that has had an effect on us because it is a place that is in disjunction a little bit with, you know, contemporary arts and so on, which makes it all more interesting.
Yeah. It's interesting that you work in so many different mediums. Do you feel like they inform each other, the sculpture and the poetry and the...
Well, mainly it's painting. I think that literature and poetry does inform my work, whether it's my own personal poetry, which is now immersed in some of my paintings. I do have text in some of my paintings in addition to figures and animals and things. I think that is all related. I think that when you are a creative, things are constantly weaving and creating this big carpet. You know, whether it's that I'm making a sculpture, I'm thinking of the sculpture in the same terms I will think of a painting. There is this presence that I am trying to achieve in whatever I make. By presence, I mean this thing that will make you have an experience of some sort. It's not just an object, right? It's a presence. Suddenly there is something very beautiful, which I, yet again, think that there is so moments in this house that have that effect without it having to be an artwork necessarily. But Jinka, Shonivari, especially the sculptures, dancers, they all have that. Yeah, so.
Well, that's a question for both of you that I have. And I know it's something that Tara thinks a lot about, being, you know, first-generation American. I'm second-generation American, but I'm Jewish, and so I also think a lot about diaspora. Mm-hmm. And just like some of the things that when we were getting the tour mm-hmm. of the exhibition here, just thinking about issues of hybridity and bringing things with you and also kind of negotiating in a new space, a space that is not your home. How do you each think of these issues as essentially kind of global cosmopolitan citizens, but in a city like Chicago that is also so rooted in a very specific local mm-hmm. culture? How do you negotiate these spaces?
I think that's a really hard question.
Fair.
I think so when I went to the Francis Willard House in Evanston, they interpret their house through a kind of a proto-feminist kind of history. And one of the things that the directors told me is that home is not a stagnant thing. Home is maintained, it's made. And that for a long time, the home has been a site of production. So I think from coming from a diasporic identity, that is very much, I think, part of how I think about these spaces. There's a kind of productive element. Wherever you go, you fashion not only with what you have, but with also what's there. So even the home that gets made is hybrid in nature, you know, with things that you brought with you, but also with, you know, what's on site. I kind of like to joke that, you know, I don't really want to carry anything that doesn't fit into, like, a check-in bag, you know, just because I'm really aware of having to move. And so, you know, the way that we navigate or the way that I've navigated space is conscientious of that. But I think that being in Chicago for this long, I think there was an inflection point where I felt a part of the city and a part of kind of its arc of history and the conversations that were happening in the different neighborhoods. I think prior to that, maybe I felt maybe not fully enmeshed, you know, in the fabric of the city, and I hadn't necessarily taken on its concerns and its conversations. But I think over time, and having lived in multiple neighborhoods at this point, I think it definitely has become a home for me, and one of the important places that I believe have really shaped my understanding and my identity. And I think it will be something that I will continue to carry with me wherever I go. Yeah.
And Jeff Lee, for you?
Well, I'm wrestling with this question because, you know, there is so much going on in this country and in my country. It's quite overwhelming. And so for me to be able to deal with this in a way that I can contain it is to go back into the privacy, into the home, the idea of home. Last year in the Gupta Show, I created a series called Fragments of an Imaginary Home. And Fragments of an Imaginary Home were this series of 10 paintings, and each painting was a little pile of clothes, of very neatly folded shirts, or mainly shirts. The reason I did this is because one day, as I was in this apartment in Chicago, and I was folding my clothes, and I was living in this apartment with another person. The apartment was not fully my home, and I'm also in another city that is, I think it's a home to me, but, you know, it's another home of the ones that I have had so far. And I was folding this clothes, and I realized that this is a habit that I'm trying to make a home out of my folding the clothes. And the reason why is because I learned these habits from my mother and my grandmother, because when you are growing up, you are taught how to make a home in these different ways. For me, it was folding the clothes and doing the house chores and all of these things. So I decided that I wanted to magnify that in a whole series of works and create this imaginary home, which is what I have been creating since I left Venezuela. Not because Venezuela is my only home, but because I feel that as an artist, I'm constantly in movement. I'm constantly traveling. I'm constantly making a home of a new place. I lived in Miami. I lived now in Chicago. In Venezuela, I lived in a few cities, different cities growing up. My family had a nomadic life, so I live in different cities. So I'm always in transition. And it seems to me that I'm trying to make these homes of places by using this little habit of life, daily life. So I am sorry that I don't have like a grand statement of how to,
I thought that was actually very lovely. Yeah. Y'all could clap for that. That was, yeah. I thought that was dope.
I was looking at your website and I saw that series and I wanted to actually ask you. So that's really beautiful though.
All right. So at this point though, you guys are Chicagoans, really. You know what I mean? You guys have been here long enough.
We'll take it. Yeah.
Right? So just a few quick questions just about the city. Like, where do you all go to get inspiration outside of the, Driehaus Museum?
Hmm. I think I have a couple of spots. For the longest time, I used to live in Hyde Park. And so I would just walk around 53rd and 55th, and I would go to the record store, and there was like a neighborhood plant shop and a Korean like restaurant, and I would go there to do a lot of thinking and to just be outside, especially in the summer months. And so that had a kind of impact on me, and I think also I used to cycle a lot, so from Hyde Park to the Loop. And so that journey along the lakefront just had, like, in the snow and in the rain, there's kind of a lot of sensory memories baked into doing that journey up and down the lakefront. And then one time I decided to walk from school home. And that was like a stupidly 4-hour journey. But I think, again, experiencing that strip along the lake, I think I come to it, I come back to it in my mind's eye, and I think that journey is where I get a lot of inspiration from outside of a place like this.
I go to antique shops and that all over the city and outside of the city too. I live in Pilsen, and I go on walks and runs about 2 or 3 times a week, even in winter. And I love looking at people's homes windows.
Yo, wait.
I know that sounds creepy, and that was not a good syntax. I'm sorry, but I was trying to create that sentence
we call that
without making it sound weird.
If you leave your blinds open.
Yeah, you're inviting a look.
Right, no. In the window.
Yeah. It's kosher.
No, it's not my fault.
Yeah. We could also edit that out if you want. Out of the sound. Yeah. Of the, you know.
But truly, especially in the
it's like, I'm a stalker.
I'm being real.
It's one of the things I like. And
no, I think it's so magical. I think it's so magical to see the lights to the window and to imagine how people live inside. And sometimes to imagine there's a family there.
You're right. You're right. You're right. You're right.
Yeah,
I just, we're, I agree, it's,
I agree.
We're weird.
I think
yeah. And watch
your
people sleep.
Like
it's really, you know,
like
and roll up in the crib.
Yeah. Oh, gosh.
That's why I live on the 3rd floor. No, that's real. That's real. That's real.
Wait, no, I have a question.
Yeah.
Really important. Have you found the good Venezuelan food here?
Actually, there is a couple of restaurants. There is a Bien Me Sabe in downtown, and there is Rica Arepa in Hermosa. And both of them are very non-pretentious restaurants. They serve real Venezuelan food, really wonderful. So you guys should try it.
Nice. Okay. All right. Kelly, any Ghanaian Austrian mashup food joints in Chicago?
Gosh, if any, only.
Yeah.
You're going to have to come to my house for that. There is a Ghanaian restaurant in Uptown called Grace African, and every time I need to eat some like banku and okra soup, that's where I go to. And I've brought a lot of people there with me, so they know me at this point. I call them like family. But I would advise going with another Ghanaian if you want to get like. If you want to know what you're getting.
Okay. Otherwise, they'll serve you a cheeseburger.
Yeah,
they'll
you'll be getting all kinds of things. There's an Austrian bakery that I found. I forget its name, but you can get Apfelstrudel there. And I'd recommend just checking it out. Yeah.
Nice. Well, you all are both like really beautiful spirits. Where can people stay in tune with what you're doing, what you're making? Where online is the best place for folks to find y'all?
I think at this point everything's going on Instagram.
Yeah.
So I think you can follow me on Instagram, Kekeli Suma, and yeah, I think that's where I'll keep it at.
Okay.
I'm also one of 4 wonderful fellows. So it's Brittany Williams, it's Luis Rodriguez, it's Daryl McKinney, and then there is me, and yes, Jeffrey Molina, Instagram, all of us have websites. It's very easy to find us. Just Google wonderful artists.
And they'll all come up.
And just to that end, before we get out of here, what is the conclusion of the program, the conclusion of the term? Mm-hmm. Is this forever? Do you all move in? What goes on?
Yeah, I think there will be an exhibition of some sort.
In the house.
In the house.
Great.
We have some artist talks. Definitely come to those if you want to hear more about Jeff Lee's and Brittany's work and Daryl and Louise's work. They'll be in conversation with each other, so you can find kind of intersections and themes between the artists.
The next one is on June 11th.
June 11th. Great. With Brittany and Louise and Jeff Lee. Yeah, July 25th with Daryl and Louise. So definitely come to that. You can hear more about the artists. You can see their work. I think keep follow all their handles on Instagram, and we will be posting updates on things to come.
Excellent. Well, y'all, can we make some noise, please, for Jeff Lee and P. Kelly? Good job.
Thank you.
We are really grateful to be able to do this at all, and so certainly want to thank the Driehaus Museum for hosting me and Tara and I this evening, and you all this evening. So salutes to all of the staff here, Amy and Richard in particular, for the vision and for welcoming us again. Want to thank WGN Radio and our staff there who makes it happen every week for us. You can listen to the Corner Store podcast every Tuesdays. We drop new episodes on WGN, on their website, and also on Apple and SoundCloud and wherever else you might listen to podcasts. We want to thank, of course, this evening our sponsor, not only tonight, but also on the Corner Store, Stolen Spirits, for their continued support of our inebriation. So salutes to them for producing incredible, incredible spirits. And again, thank you, the two of you, so much for being here. And thank you all for listening, and continue to tune in. Thanks, y'all. Yo, we want to thank DJ Exist for the beat.
Langston Olsen for the art.
Big ups, Todd Manley at WGN Radio.
And Max and Dami, the Corner Store interns.
Salutes to our super producer, DJ Cash Era.
You can keep in tune with the Corner Store at cornerstore_pod on Instagram, Twitter, and SoundCloud.
Also, you can stream and download the Corner Store wherever you listen to podcasts.
And please rate and subscribe and comment on iTunes.
Please, y'all, consider giving us those 5 stars.
Thank you for listening.
We're going to see you next week.
The Corner Store is brought to you by Stolen Spirits.